Welcome to the South Florida Roundup on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening and supporting public radio. In-person early voting across South Florida continues. Thousands already have cast ballots in Broward, Miami-Dade, Monroe, and Palm Beach counties. Meantime, millions of vote-by-mail ballots have already been returned. The coronavirus pandemic has likely fueled this increase in mail-in ballots, as is the high interest in the 2020 election. We'll talk more about the election later on in this program. You can join our conversation. Are you still undecided about your vote for president? What other races or issues are important to you? Undecided voters, NPA voters, we do want to hear from you later on in the program. Call now, 800-743-WLRN. Blue, red, or undecided, same phone number for everybody on the South Florida Roundup, 800-743-9576. But first, the coronavirus. Florida is seeing cases rise almost a month into the Phase 3 reopening. I spoke with Mary Jo Trepka about the trends. She's an infectious disease epidemiologist and chairs the epidemiology department at Florida International University. Dr. Trepka, welcome back to WLRN and welcome to the South Florida Roundup. How would you describe the stage that our region is in right now in regards to COVID-19?
Well, I would say relative to many other parts of the United States, we are in much better situation. The Florida's rate, average number of cases per day, is lower than the national average and certainly much lower than what we're seeing in the upper Midwest. Having said that, though, there are, have been some worries, some signs over the last couple of weeks in the sense that we've started to see an increase in the number of cases, as well as the people testing positive within the state of Florida. Certainly nowhere to the extent that it was back in July, but we were at a nadir in terms of the numbers of cases, percentage of positives in the end of September. We were flat for a while, and it's starting to creep up a little bit. So we'll have to see what happens, but it is a little bit concerning.
How concerning is that creep, that daily percent positive number that had been kind of the threshold? We're right at that 5% plus or minus, you know, a few dozen or a few hundred cases.
Right. So we're not having exponential growth right now. The concern is that this could become a surge with exponential growth, because certainly that's what we saw this summer. So that's why I think it's really important right now that people wear their masks, do what they can individually to try to keep community transmission rates low. I mean, I can say, you know, in Miami-Dade County, we're having close to 500 new cases a day. It's not like we don't have COVID-19. COVID-19 is here and we're still having transmission. Given that everything is open right now, the schools are open, it's really important that we do what we can in terms of personally wearing masks when we're within 6 feet of other people, staying home when we don't feel well, not attending large events, because if rates go up, we might have to start shutting things down again, and people don't want to do that. I mean, there's a lot of adverse effects of shutting things down, but we have to protect the healthcare system, because this summer our healthcare system was at its brink. It really could take no more cases. We were so fortunate that the rates finally did come down.
With the number of cases that Miami-Dade County, for instance, is experiencing each day, as an epidemiologist, are we still experiencing community spread of the coronavirus?
We're absolutely experiencing community spread.
And why is that designation important?
Well, it's not that we have one little outbreak in a nursing home or some other institution. Rather, we are seeing cases throughout the community at pretty high levels. You know, at 500 cases a day, that's a lot of new cases. And we know that we don't have every case diagnosed that exists, because many people are asymptomatic. So probably there's at least twice as many people who are currently infectious with COVID-19 that we don't even know about.
What about the patient profile? How has that changed? Has it at all? The governor talks about the age of folks who are testing positive and talks about the very low fatality rate for younger folks. folks who have it. What are we experiencing?
Well, the median age in Florida is currently at 38, which is higher than it was in the beginning of the summer when there was a lot of transmission among young people. The issue is that COVID-19 also kills young people, number one. Number two, COVID-19 results in long-term effects for many people who are infected. It's not like everybody who doesn't die suddenly feels well once they recover. We have a lot of people that have long-term neurological problems, cardiac problems. I don't think we even begin to understand how people are going to be affected over the long term.
I want to ask you a little bit about statistics and how they're being communicated. You deal with these numbers each and every day. You're a medical professional epidemiologist, so you understand how best to read these as a scientist and how to communicate them in the public. The governor in Florida particularly has made a case about statistics and in fact sends out daily emails. And one of the emails sent out this week, I'm reading it right now. It says the number of vaccines and therapeutics in development, 213. Number of vaccines in clinical testing, 36. These are facts of COVID-19 that the governor says you won't read in the news. Are these important? How do they play into communicating this virus to the public here in South Florida and information that community members ought to know in regards to the state of the virus?
Well, with respect to the number of vaccines that are in trial, there are a lot of vaccines that are currently being studied at many different stages, the preclinical, phase one, phase two, phase three. I think it probably is only useful right now looking at the phase three, because those are the vaccines that have shown enough promise, have been safe enough that they're being tested in large groups of people, like 30,000 people. I am very hopeful that we will have a vaccine. However, those trials have to be completed. A vaccine is not a therapeutic. By that, I mean that if you are sick, you need a medication, you will get a medication, right? Because the not treating you, there's a larger risk associated with that. With a vaccine, vaccines are given to healthy people to prevent an illness. So we have to have a very high standard of safety to give a vaccine. So we need to have the results of these phase three trials in order to know which of these many vaccines is going to be a safe and effective vaccine. Hopefully there'll be several of them. And I am hopeful, but that doesn't mean that we have those vaccines now. I don't know when we're going to have those vaccines. I hope that we'll have the vaccines, you know, sometime in 2021, but they're definitely not ready now. We need to have those phase three trial results, and we have to have at least one vaccine that is safe and effective.
And then, of course, a distribution plan for that vaccine or vaccines as well.
That's right. And then there has to be a discussion about who gets the vaccine first. Presumably, it will go to those people at higher risk, for example, the healthcare providers, because we have to protect the people working in our hospitals, right? But then the people who are elderly and other people at high risk of dying. The time period from when we get a safe and effective vaccine until we can provide enough vaccine to the entire population to get herd immunity, that's going to take some time. And until that time occurs, we have to keep the transmission rates low enough so that our hospitals are not overwhelmed. So I think that's really our goal. And if we're not able to do that, we have to shut down. And nobody wants to do that. And that's why I'm urging people to please continue to wear their masks. And there's no economic downside to not wearing your mask. Yes, it's unpleasant, but I think we all have to do our part because we're all in this together.
Mary Jo Trepka is an infectious disease epidemiologist at Florida International University. I'm Tom Hudson. We are on the South Florida Roundup. Dr. Trepka, the schools reopened in South Florida 2-3 weeks or so ago. The governor declared the state of Florida was in phase three reopening a month ago. Has enough time elapsed to determine any impact that those actions have taken on infection rates and spread?
I'm thinking the beginning of November is when we're going to truly see the impact. The reason I say that is that there's generally some spread that is undetected, especially with young people, because those are the people that are most likely to be asymptomatic. It is very possible that we have unrecognized spread among young people. And then older people start to get infected, and then they show up in the hospitals, and then we know about those cases. So if we can keep our rates really low through November, that'd be just absolutely fantastic.
What does really low mean to you as an epidemiologist?
I think if we can keep the percent of people testing positive below 5%, we keep the number of cases, at least say in Miami-Dade County, in the 100, 200 cases a day, that would be very, very good. And I would congratulate all of us if we can make that happen. But I am concerned because over the last couple of weeks, we have seen an uptick in the state as well as in South Florida, Broward and Palm Beach in particular, and also with respect to Miami-Dade in terms of the numbers of cases.
If you were to advise public policy makers about certain triggers as they're watching that infection rate, maybe not each day look at that daily rate, but look at the trend, at what point do you start to get more concerned about putting potential restrictions back into place?
I think you have to look at all the pieces of data. For example, first, the testing data, percentage of people testing positive, the number of positives that we're seeing each day, and then what's happening in the hospitals. If we start to see the number of admissions due to COVID-19 being much greater than the people who are discharging, then we have to really think about dialing back. Unfortunately, what we saw this summer is that the rate of increase was much steeper than the rate of decrease. So it took us a lot longer to get down than it took us to get up.
This week, the Florida Surgeon General, Scott Rifke, has announced that the state will review dozens of deaths that were blamed on the virus. And this follows criticism by the Florida Speaker of the House, Jose Oliva, who questioned how COVID deaths were being classified. The state review points out that dozens of COVID deaths were weeks or months after the person had tested positive initially for the virus. So first, Dr. Trepka, is this kind of review standard practice?
No, I don't think it's standard practice. I mean, I think it's fine to do an additional review. Having said that, though, it doesn't surprise me that some people's deaths could be due to COVID and they could be delayed, because I already told you about that we recognize that people have cardiac damage that is damage to their hearts, they have damage to their lungs, they have neurologic problems. So that doesn't surprise me that we do have some deaths that would occur after the acute infection.
And would it be medically appropriate to classify those deaths even weeks after on COVID?
When a physician classifies the cause of death, there's what's called the underlying cause of death, and then there's the immediate cause of death. What's important is the underlying cause of death. So the underlying cause of death would be COVID, even if the person had, say, myocarditis, some cardiac problem related to COVID a couple, you know, weeks down the line or so forth. So it's the cause of death is always the underlying cause of death.
Let me ask a question that's on the minds of a lot of parents and children in South Florida. Halloween is coming up. What ought the trick-or-treat scenario best be to practice appropriate protocols?
I think that people have to maintain the 6 feet between other people at all times. So maybe people can leave the candy at the end of the driveway or something like that. You know, it's so sad for the kids that Halloween is probably going to be affected due to this pandemic. But I do think there's probably safe things to do as long as people are outside and they're keeping their distance. Watch out for crowds of people. You know, you want to avoid that. And parents need to do the part to, you know, keep the kids 6 feet apart from everybody else.
Dr. Trepka, an early happy Halloween to you.
Thank you. You too.
That's Mary Jo Trepka with Florida International University. Still to come, what does the Latino vote really mean here in South Florida? More on that and your phone calls and tweets. Undecided voters, NPA voters, we want to hear from you. Call now, 800-743-WLRN, 800-743-9576.